Welcome to Eltana John's La Liga Weekly. We've got 90 nail-biting minutes to go. Or, as Diego Simeone would say, stay calm! Stay calm! Everybody stay calm! they had actually blown.
And point at his head. as it's exploding.
They were losing to Osasuna. A draw would have given Real Madrid the advantage. Then Renan Lodi was the hero. And then Luis Suarez took them to the brink, only for them to get caught with too many players up the pitch. And Osasuna had chances to equalise again. Imagine if Atleti had blown the league by being too attacking. The irony of that. All the big stuff will happen on Saturday. Little asterisks by that, because they keep changing when the games are. But we think Saturday, Real Madrid will win the league. So they have to beat Villarreal. And then they need Valladolid to get a point or three against Atleti. At the bottom, it's farewell to poor old Eibar, relegated because Gonzalo Guedes remembered he's good. Alaves and Getafe are safe. Two of three will go down. We've got the relegation head-to-heads worked out, and that's always a ratings winner. So stay tuned for that bit. Getafe got five yellows and a red after the 82nd minute of their game against Levante. Bordalás should have dropped his mic and walked out of the stadium in a full-time whistle. Meanwhile, of course, Barcelona. Great result for Barcelona this weekend. 4-0 in the Champions League final against Chelsea. Actually, did the men's team play? Let me just... Oh, yeah. Have you noticed how many Barca fans are now fans of women's football? Still, with the new TV deal, the English clubs will soon have reserve teams packed full of internationals, and they'll be grinding it out against everybody else in women's football as well. So don't worry about that. Right, well, thank you to our Patreons for your continued support, patreon.com/LTEL. And please do, we'll be there throughout the summer. I know it's all done, 90 minutes away this weekend, and it's all done, except the worst games in the world that are being played on Sunday. Talk about after the Lord Mayor show. So there are two games, aren't there? Sevilla play Alaves on Sunday night, after everything, all the drama that we're going to get Saturday, guaranteed.
And Granada Getafe.
Yeah, everyone's looking forward to those ones. I remember when you do a marathon or a half marathon, the crowd,
you get one of those big medals.
Yeah, yep. So the crowds are cheering, and you know, there's like, hey, come on, and all that. If you're really, really slow, there's a lorry follows behind you. All the crowds have gone, and there are basically blokes in high-vis vests chucking the crash barriers onto a lorry behind you as you run along, which is what Sevilla Alaves is on Sunday night. It's like people looking at their watches. Oh, are you still here? Right, Terry, you've got to convey for people the drama of the games this weekend. Boy, I mean, Atleti, I've gone on about how much, and everybody else has, but how much drama and suffering it is following Atleti. We're not even Atleti fans. You know, imagine being a proper fan.
I did wonder that. That's what I imagined what it must be like. I mean, it's. I did wonder, you know, how they what they put their supporters through.
Yeah.
And you know, the second half. I mean, the first half it was all pretty dull, wasn't it? And like people in the UK and around the world, I was watching the multi-goal program from La Liga, and at the same time had the Real Madrid, Athletic Real Madrid game on my iPad. And then I had to go on television 2 minutes after the game ends and on La Liga TV and discuss all 10 matches. And having seen, you know, just goals from, it was a great afternoon sitting there watching all the goals coming in and the flying in and the writing down each goal in chronological order, writing down the halftime scores. And most of the action was teams at the bottom, you know, either getting thrashed or doing well. Whereas at the top teams were at half-time, were goalless in the Atletico Osasuna game, goalless in the Athletic Real Madrid game, and Barca were 1-1. So it was all level at half-time. Little did I, you know what was going to happen in the second half. And it was great. I mean, it was... Savic had a goal disallowed. There was goals disallowed. Atletico Madrid hitting the post. Missing chances that Luis Suarez would normally take. At this round about the same time, Savic had a goal disallowed. Casemiro hit the bar with a header. And then that was when it just started to warm up. And then Osasuna, Real Madrid get the goal from Nacho. Slightly controversial. Benzema in an offside position, wasn't he? And there's so many laws of the game now, which I I'm baffled. I don't understand. So I don't know whether it's the right decision or the wrong decision. And at round, not long after Osasuna take the lead at Atletico, we're seeing messages from the various people in the stand, which are substitutes and non-playing members of the squad, passing on messages that, you know, Osasuna has scored. You would see him telling the Real Madrid subs. And then you're thinking Atletico are going to blow it. And despite being top since week 13, Real Madrid were going to go into the last week of the season, top of the pole, having only topped it once all season. Because I didn't see the comeback. It took a while because after Budimir scored the goal for Osasuna, which was the only attempt on target the whole game, when he scored, it really knocked the stuffing out of Atletico. And then they had the drinks break then, didn't they? Which gave Simeone a chance to pull his team together. And as you said, calm down, just calm down. But it kind of needed that urgency from their game. You know, that drastic urgency needed that they were in trouble. And that was their best spell of the game. For them to come back, at one stage you're thinking, well, they at least need a draw. At least need a goal, then it's still going to be out of their hands. And, you know, for Atletico Madrid, you know, their supporters, thankfully, they got it in the 82nd minute from one of the subs, Renan Lodi, with the pass of the weekend, one of the passes of the season from João Felix. I mean, if you get watch it again, the technique he uses is ridiculous. His foot comes out at a weird angle. It's like a little skip before he plays it. He puts a bit of a backspin on it. It was actually quite a straightforward pass, but the technical style he put on it was brilliant. And Lodi, who's coming for some criticism this year, has lost confidence under Simeone, who's lost faith in him, finished it off brilliantly. Then he was set up for the, you know, Luis Suarez, to finally take one of those chances. It was him involved in the build-up. He knocks it wide. He gets himself into the box. Carrasco's been brilliant recently. Does well. Cut back to Luis Suarez and he thrashes it home. And at last, we got the dramatic second half we was hoping for.
And a pylon. And
still got a week to go.
More people than I've on that pylon than I thought were in the stadium. people coming from everywhere, weren't they?
it was. And I guess there's a noise outside that we can't recognise because Simeone and the players keep mentioning the crowds outside the stadium who must be watching it on their phones and stuff and, you know, cheering at the right time and celebrating at the right time. And it's such a dramatic ending to the season now.
And they still
have played their part as well.
But they still had chances. They also soon, didn't they? Yeah, Jimmy Avila had a chance, didn't they?
So they
They had a second. That must be two shots on target.
You lose control then. It's chaos. You lose control in trying to get back into the game. And at times that suits Atletico better.
Yeah.
You know, it's against their nature, but they had to do something. Players were, you know, more attacking players than we normally see from Simeone. The urgency is there. It's now or never. And, you know, that's what makes it such a good sport at times. You know, everything can, sometimes football can be too structured. Yeah. And when you just have to let loose and throw caution to the wind and get the ball forward quicker than you normally would, you know, daft things happen. You then, when you do get those goals like Atletico got, you've then got a period of you've got to adjust quickly to, you know, we've got a team full of attacking players. Our attacking mentality has got us back in the lead. Now we've got to, you know, somehow switch back on to being the other face of Atletico Madrid. So it was a tougher game than I thought because they failed to take the early chances. If they take them, it's a comfortable afternoon. But when you don't in that situation, you start to believe it's not going to be your day. And particularly when Osasuna take the lead, you know, you start to feel hard done by. But to their credit, Atletico, they fought back and got the win in the end.
So this weekend, what are we looking forward to? So Real Madrid against Villarreal and it's Valladolid against Atletico. It's not a straight shootout because obviously Atleti have the advantage. So Real Madrid have to win. It's an interesting one, isn't it, to know what you do with your TV coverage. Obviously, show both games would be the idea on two different channels. so what's the... I mean, I sort of know the approach. Atleti will come out positively against Valladolid and if they get in front at some point, they will try and drop anchor, won't they, and try and hang on and be...
I hope that isn't the case. A normal approach against a team who have hit rock bottom, to be perfectly honest. I mean, a vitally team that were 4-0 down against Real Sociedad just after half an hour.
Yeah.
And a vitally team where the manager made 10 changes from the previous game. Vitally haven't got 21 players that can play at that level to keep them in the division. It's sometimes, you can be involved with a manager. Maybe after he's gone, you realise. I've actually had one manager who's admitted he didn't realise till he'd gone. They lose the plot. They really do. They start making irrational decisions in the hope they can galvanise and do something different. And when they do leave the club and you speak to them later on, they even say, I have no idea what I was doing then. It's just the pressure. And for a manager to make 10 changes for a game, it's almost like I couldn't work out whether he was resting them for the last game.
That was the game, wasn't it? That they
made
won.
Two substitutions in the first half.
Yeah, yeah. Because you looked at their fixtures via Valladolid fixtures, and you're thinking a few weeks ago, you're thinking it's not an unwinnable one, that one against Real Sociedad. I know they're a good team, Real Sociedad, but it's not unwinnable. And then
their game before was Villarreal, which they lost 2-0. Yeah. Not disaster. They've got a disastrous run in. But then to chuck everything out and rip it all up and start again with 10 different players, even including the different goalkeeper, then you're asking for trouble. And to go 4-0 down as quickly, by the 35th minute, they were 4-0 down. So I can't see how they're going to turn around that situation. The only thing is they might be thinking to themselves, I mean, do you sack the manager with one game to go? Might be a case of. If he's drastically done things that wrong, and you've had faith in him, I can't see him being manager next season.
No.
Why not make a change? You know, just for one game. A Voro type at Valladolid, and I'm sure exists there, waiting to step out of the shadows in his black cape. I have this image of Voro doing that every time a manager gets a sack at Valencia, him coming out of a darkened corridor in a black cape, going, Voro's back, seventh time. And that's working, by the way. But for Valladolid, I just wonder whether, something drastic, like change the manager just for the last game, put someone in as a caretaker to pick a team. There isn't too much coaching needed in the week. It's all about mentality and attitude. So it'd be interesting to see what happens with Valladolid. But, that might be their only saving grace, that they think they're dead and buried. Life can't get any worse after being smacked 4-0 by half-time. And then you're still in it. You've still got an outside chance, chance, a slim chance.
Should we have a
turning around and beating Atletico Madrid?
Right. So, Valladolid, they need to win their game, basically, don't they? They need to get to 34.
Yeah, they're 2 points adrift, aren't they?
So they're on 31. So Eibar are down. We'll have a quick chat about Eibar in a bit, shall we?
But programme I did, when they said to me, Eibar are down, that was the first I'd heard of that. When you look at the table straight as soon as you look at it, you think, well, Huesca are out the bottom three on 33. Eibar are bottom on 30.
Yeah, so they can catch them on 33,
In that 2 minutes, I hadn't had time to do the head-to-head before going live on there.
Eibar are down on head-to-head because they've got 30 points, one game to play, so they can catch Huesca. Ironically, they can catch Huesca, who aren't in the bottom three, but in doing, they can't get above Elche because they'd go into the mini-league. So it's not goal. Forget goal. In fact, don't forget goal difference. This is it. Put goal difference to one side for now. Do the mini leagues. Do the head, and then put another team in, and do a different mini league. So they can get to 33 points, but that would leave them. So they can finish 18th, but Elche would have won. So the only way they can finish on 33. And catch both Huesca and Elche is to go into a mini league, but then they lost both their games against Elche, so they wouldn't win the mini league. So they can't stay up. Should we do Valladolid's mini? Because how Valladolid? So they win and go to 34. The other two lose, they're fine, they're up. Straightforward on points. But on a mini league, so Huesca would win
and Elche draw. Valladolid win.
So they all end up on 34. And it's Valladolid, Huesca and Elche together on 34. Huesca win. Huesca stay up on the mini-league. If It gets to 34 and it's Valladolid against Elche, and Huesca are what? Huesca would be on 33 and down. Then that's when goal difference comes in, because they drew both of their games. Elche and Valladolid drew twice. So then it would be goal difference. And if you look at it...
Got it all now.
Yeah. I think you need to write it down as you go. I mean, hopefully, obviously, these things get discounted. No, but what was the other one we worked out? The Europa League places.
Yeah.
So a three-team mini-league between Real Sociedad, Betis and Villarreal. Now, it's all about whether you're in the Europa League or the Conference League. But that does matter. So Betis win that three-team mini-league. But Real Sociedad beat them in a straight head-to-head. And then there is a possibility that if Villarreal draw 0-0 and Real Sociedad lose 4-1, that their records are identical. And then you get into the fair play. And I haven't checked the fair plays.
No. Beg your pardon.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry.
How many hours have you had since the games ended last night?
So it's complicated, basically. Yeah, so that's how Valladolid can stay up. So they need to win. So that's their approach to that
game.
They
have to win.
Yeah, which is good, which is straightforward. You can watch that game knowing that they have to win. Let's just say something about Eibar, Terry. You know what? There's been a load of sympathy for Eibar. I don't mind. You know, the whole European Super League thing, the main objection to it was that they were going to abolish relegation. So it's not the end of the world, is it?
No, I know.
You go down, you come back. You go, you know.
Espanyol, Mallorca coming back up this season.
Yeah.
After
so it's
being
not
relegated.
It's not goodbye forever to Eibar. They're not being wound up as a club. They
no.
If they're good enough next season, they'll bounce back. They shouldn't panic. You know.
Yeah.
I
can't see any other manager at their club still.
No.
I think Mendilibar is the right man, and lessons will have to be learned. Slowly over the last few years, players have aged, and then the best players have moved on, and they haven't they haven't replaced them. And I think that's Escalante is a big loss, I think. I'm trying to work out what the difference is between this year's Eibar. He had that necessary work rate and he had the quality in midfield.
Yeah.
That's been lacking this season. They tried all different players in there. Pape Diop is in mid-30s and is still playing pretty much every game. So I think that's the obvious reason. Of course, no other goal scorer other than Kike Garcia. So Sergio Henrique isn't reproducing the goals that he got two or three seasons ago. Remarkably, they've only won two home games. So you're going to get relegated on the back of that. They've only won six in total. Therefore, you know, you're candidates for relegation. And unfortunately, they have gone down. Three teams have to go down. And it's been on the cards that this has been their worst season for a while. And then eventually it was going to happen.
So it won't be Alaves and it won't be Getafe. So they've done it. We've been waiting and waiting for Getafe to get that win. That, you know, for weeks saying, they're almost there. But they finally done it. And with a bit of irony, Terry, Alenia and Kubo with the goal scorers who... There's been a sort of a thread of opinion that they should have gone with those talented, trying to change how they were going. And it just seemed to be stuck in the middle of the road a bit, borderless, didn't it? For a man who was so clear in his views...
I think it's been their big problem, an identity crisis for the first half of the season.
Yeah,
I think that, and we've never got to the bottom of why it happened. My allegation is it was an attempt from Bordalas for him to appear as a better coach, that he could, you know, paint with a different brush, if you say, and rather than just do it the classic Getafe style that we've seen him in be successful. And the team and the players, I thought they lost their identity. They were neither one nor the other. They weren't very good at playing football, and they weren't as effective as when they were being Getafe. And I think eventually as the season progressed, I mean, it's been a tough run for them. They haven't scored enough goals this year, which is not an accusation. We label it a normal Getafe Bordalas side. Jorge Molina has moved on, but they've still got some decent strikers, but they were playing. It wasn't just the players that came in, like Kubo and Alenia. It was a different style. We were seeing him play 4-3-3 with just one striker, Cucho Hernandez, I say, with two wide players, and, you know, playing players like Alenia and Kubo. Alenia's been good, I think, and I think he could play in any style of football the ball the less wants. Kubo has suffered because there hasn't been room for him, But it is ironic that the unknown Barcelona player and unknown Real Madrid player do get the goals that that keep eventually, ultimately keep them up.
Yeah.
But so that'd be interesting to see. Bordalas has been linked with a Valencia job. And I know he has had terrible relationships with pretty much all of the Valencia managers in the last 5 years. And yet, for some reason, Valencia think he might be a good choice. Maybe it'll be the case. When we see him with respect to the Getafe players and the budget they've had, it'd be interesting to see him with better players, that he has to play a different type of football that suits the players that he moves, you know, into. So it'd be interesting to see his progress now.
Will Guedes be at Valencia next season?
Who knows? I mean, I don't know the financial situation at Valencia. Soler is another one as well. Maxi Gomez, can they keep him? Jose Gaya, if you're Jose Gaya, I know he loves the club and that's where he's from and where he's come through. But he will be hoping, he's at the top of his game now. Fantastic left back, much coveted from other teams in La Liga and around Europe. He will have to see, like those the rest of those players, some evidence that Valencia are going to try to get back to being a Champions League team.
Fans in the stadium, and they immediately give Peter Lim grief, which is good. Obviously,
but do you know what's interesting? I think it's something we should touch on. The two games where they had fans in the stadium, both the home team scored four goals.
Yeah,
Villarreal got four, Valencia got four. I actually thought it was unfair that they had fans in the stadium, and I desperate like everybody, because suddenly you're Eibar playing at a stadium that's got home supporters in.
Yeah, I get that.
In the middle of a relegation battle.
But I...
Likewise,
that slight unfairness, I think, is just outweighed by getting some fans in, if at all possible. I think it just outweighs it. And we had the same in England, didn't we?
I didn't get it. Why it was in order them, though?
Different regulations in different regions, wasn't it? So, different COVID levels in different regions. I mean, I take your point. It is unfair, but I think it's... Life's unfair. It would be my, you know, response to that particular.
It was interesting. Backed by supporters, those teams excel. You know, particularly in Valencia's case, some of their best football of the season.
Yeah, football is brilliant with fans in.
Exactly.
The FA Cup
final was like.
What's the FA Cup final? Totally and hearing. Different. And you forget. I mean, I know you and I we've commentated internationals with fans in with Georgia and Holland and. And you that awful sort of background crowd noise. I don't like anyway. I'd rather have the real shouting. But then the reaction, sometimes irrational reaction of real people is just brilliant, isn't it? That's what they think, is it? It is a wonderful thing. And obviously, I mean, Peter Lim's had it easy this year. There are certain people, probably managers and owners of clubs, who should be grateful there have been no fans at a certain.
Especially 100%.
Right. So we're going to do a break, and then we're going to do Barcelona. We haven't forgotten Barcelona fans. We haven't written you off. can we just talk about Real Madrid's game? I mean, I don't know how much of it did you? I suppose you had it on two screens. I watch all games. I've got too many things going on.
Yeah, it's become a thing, isn't it? I've often thought about moving another telly as well to make it three.
Yeah, but then you're not quite watching any of them properly. That's the problem.
No, you're not. Yeah. That is the problem. And writing stuff down. It is difficult. For Real Madrid, I think I was disappointed with Athletic Bilbao's performance, first and foremost, because they've done well lately. They beat Sevilla away, they beat Atletico Madrid at home. I had this down as a really tough fixture for Real Madrid, despite them having numerous absences. I mean, even more now. I mean, Toni Kroos has got coronavirus. So he's been affected by someone who had coronavirus, so he's had to go. He won't play next week either. So that's a blow for Real Madrid. So despite all those absences, I mean, just think of the team they could have with everybody fit and healthy, and they're nowhere near that. So I, you know, likewise against Granada, I thought that'd be a tough fixture for a team that's depleted. Likewise this one, but without playing spectacularly well, they were in the more attacking team from the first minute to the last, which kind of surprised me. I thought Athletic Bilbao, with nothing left to play for, might have had a bit more of a positive approach. Because the nature of Athletic Bilbao is they're proud, and when they play the big giant clubs in the Liga, they want to topple them. But we didn't see that evidence in this game. So therefore, it was quite a comfortable victory for Real Madrid, despite only getting the one goal. But they, you know, classic Real Madrid, they fight to the very end. Whatever the circumstances, whatever the obstacles, whoever's missing, I can't believe for one second that Zinedine Zidane told his players he was going to leave. Right. I found that story bemusing, and he's come out and said pretty much the same. But it's interesting, isn't it, how someone can suggest something that's been with no real backup, and then it spreads like wildfire to the extent that the story becomes Zinedine Zidane told his players on Wednesday or Thursday that he was leaving the club, and he's done. And you're thinking, and my first reaction was, why would you do that? Why, with two games to go, it doesn't look great to the players that you're not committed. And he's come out and said that, but it went everywhere to the extent you start to believe it.
Yeah.
And then I actually, when you look at the merits of it, I just don't see any benefits for Zidane saying to his players, well, I'm off.
Do you think is there a possibility he will go?
I think so. I think he will. Yeah, I think there is some truth in the story.
Yeah.
But I don't think the events have happened in the way that he told them, announcements to the players. Yeah. Because it's going to get out. It has to. So you can't, because that one of those players will tell family, will tell friends, will tell their agent, and then it gets out. And then you're then having to deal with the fallout before these last two games. So Zidane is daft. Some of the players might believe it and think it's going. He might have alluded to it without saying it. They might have sort of read it in his body language and the way he's behaving at the club. I don't see any benefit from him saying to the players, right, this is my last hurrah. I'm leaving. Win the league for me. Don't tell anyone. That, I just don't see that as being realistic. So I think there is merit in the story long term. But I think he's focused. The other thing, can I have a little moan? Not a moan. Why do managers always say, I had no idea of the score in the other game? They're lying. I promise you, they're lying. Even with no one in the stadium, but information gets passed around. Someone will always say to the manager, oh, Atletico are 1-0 down to Zidane. And he was like, don't tell me. I don't want to hear. They're lying. I guess it's the professional thing to say. Simeone said it. No, I was just concentrating on our game. Liar! Don't tell fibs. Zidane, no, I had no idea who'd have scored the other game. Why do managers do that? And I've been on the bench, Fulham in the Premier League, 5 games as interim manager as it was at the time. It didn't last much longer than an interim manager spell. As assistant to Laurie Sanchez. The information was everywhere. People in the stadium, of course, but we had someone telling us it's on phones. Someone had the headphones on and they're telling us the latest updates. The manager can't put earmuffs on and just concentrate on that game. And after it go, oh, so we're not down, you know, act surprised. It happens. And it's been happening since football began.
Yes. Sometimes
it spectacularly goes wrong.
Well, since we've had phones and radios.
Wrong information and stuff. Even before, wrong information passed on. And was it Manchester City were protecting the ball in the corner flag many years ago? I think it was against Luton and David Pleat famously run on the pitch.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
I think there was a wrong information back in the day of radios. A goal disallowed, everyone thought was allowed or something. And the information passed on to the players was wrong until it was too late to tell them. And they were time-wasting when they needed another goal. These things happen. But it just made me laugh at the weekend, hearing Zidane, hearing Simeone saying, no, I didn't know the score. I focus only on my game. I promise you that's not true. But it's the professional thing to say.
Right. At some point, Terry, in the next couple of weeks, we must have a proper chat about Real Betis. I don't propose to do it now, though, because we've got to do Barca. No. After the break, but they have done well. We'll see where they finish, and then we'll have a chat about those teams, their own band of teams, and the Real Sociedad, Villarreal, and Betis, who have been impressive. Betis better than I thought, actually, to be fair, this season. I was wrong. I thought they would be up and down as Betis as they normally are, but they haven't been. But right, so we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to unpick Barcelona. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Old Ellen John's La Liga Weekly. So we've saved up Barcelona. We've done the title race. The title race is done, as we sort of knew it was. But, well, they went out with a whimper, I'm afraid, didn't they? Lionel Messi with a towering header. Is that the end? Is he, you know, has he played his last home league game? Is it all going to finish away to Eibar? Because they lost the game 2-1 against Celta Vigo. Fifth straight win for Celta Vigo, but it's not really about them, is it? I suppose, Terry, if you look at it, they didn't lack goals this season. Barcelona, he's the top scorers in La Liga.
Yep.
Lenglet sent off. It's keeping the ball out of the other end is what's done them, isn't it?
It just looks so easy to score against them now, I have to say. Is that a criticism of the three at the back? Possibly. Criticism of the positioning play of the wing backs as well, the players that are playing in the wing back position. So I think there's work to be done there. But this could be a criticism that goes back 2 or 3 years. It's not just about the three at the back. It has been too easy to create chances against Barcelona, and that is the big problem. The first goal Celta scored the weekend. There's no resistance at all. No attempt to stop the ball coming in from wide. From a player that's, I think it was Aspas, not under pressure, and no, you know, resistance against Santi Mina from Piqué to allow him to control the ball, use Piqué as a block, and just swerves it round him into the bottom corner to beat Ter Stegen. It's just so easy to score there. Barcelona unlucky with a second goal. The cross that's hit the post and rebounds back into the path of Santi Mina. But if you look against Granada, against Levante, they're always chasing back towards their own goal, outnumbered. And, you know, opposing teams at all levels in La Liga and European football will know how you can beat Barcelona. And that's something that Ronald Koeman, or whoever is in charge, is going to have to resolve. They've got the top striker in La Liga, 30 goals from Messi, the highest scorers in La Liga, good midfield players, a little bit of protection with Busquets in midfield or Frenkie de Jong. But it's just resolving that back three or back four. Personally, I'd go to a back four. I think Alba's better at left back. Destiny's got as promise for a full-back position. When they're back playing wing-back, they relinquish any defensive responsibilities, so the space is even more prevalent when teams attack them. And I think Koeman has to get over his obsession with a left-footed central defender, because it's not an issue for most clubs. It can be a benefit. It can be helpful. But I think with Lenglet and Umtiti, despite them being left-footed, they're not the answer. I think Piqué is under pressure. I think he'll still be around next season. I think Araujo will be his best partner. And, you know, if Barcelona will be hoping that the two of them can remain pretty much injury-free, play together for a period of time, and it has the potential of being a decent centre-back pair. Ramos plays left-sided for Real Madrid.
Yeah. Is it realistic for Piqué to play... What we're talking, 50 games?
Yeah, well, either he packs in or doesn't. Right, I mean, you can't do one or the other as a centre back.
You can't be
an aging centre back that's on the heels.
Puyol did that for quite a while, didn't he? Yeah,
no, but he was still great, Puyol. Mm. I still think he retired too early, Puyol.
Yeah, but he was injured. I remember that rightly,
his performances never deteriorated. No, then. I think PKs are.
But right, so yeah.
If is that a consequence of the three at the back and not being fit and playing irregular? I mean, he had one particularly long injury this year, so it's tough to come back at that age.
Let's talk about the centre backs first. So, if you can, this is because people always have this discussion about. I see it on Twitter all the time. People, oh right, we'll sell him. Never works that. It's not easy to sell players at the moment because they're overpaid.
No, of course.
So are you, if you can, get some money in for Umtiti and Lenglet, are you doing that? And then bearing in mind they've got a billion euros of debt, what are you doing in the transfer market? Are you bringing in a centre-back? Are you... They're trying to get an American sponsor.
Eric
they're
Garcia.
Trying to reschedule.
That's done.
Right.
Eric Garcia's done, isn't it? So that's another one. And you've got Mingueza.
Yeah. So is that...
That's done.
Yeah.
Don't need any more than four.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's another younger one.
Yeah.
Knocking around Barcelona as well. You'd hope so. We've seen the quality there, young ones, quality at Real Madrid, young ones. Miguel Gutierrez, the left back at Real Madrid, looks a stunning player. Mm. So there will be some others there, I trust. So, you know, four isn't the end of the world. So, my concerns with PK being his age and his injury problems, particularly in the knee now. But I think if he can be fit, PK and Araujo with, you know, Mingueza, Eric Garcia, I'm not saying it's for, you know, good enough to win the Champions League, but I think if PK and Araujo could play together on a regular basis, with good backup from the other two, where you could rest PK for games, then, you know, that wouldn't be too bad.
And then, so Depay, long rumoured to be coming in. Do you want him? Do you want Aguero? Bear in mind, they got rid of Luis Suarez, who's now, you know, on the verge of his magnificent triumph with Atletico. They got rid of him because he was too old, couldn't play with Messi, et cetera, et cetera. Do you just seems to be going down the same path to bring Aguero in?
It depends, I guess, on cost, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Aguero, I'm led to believe, is pretty keen on the move and appears willing to get realistic wages for the chance to play alongside Messi and to play for Barcelona. I mean, I'm just checking. So, he's 32, Aguero.
Yeah. It's not that old, but it's a lot of miles on the clock. And he's slowed down, you know, and he's a bit part player at City.
In my opinion, he's never been lightning quick. Yeah. No, and yet somehow has that burst of pace over short distances to get away from defence, and he's a brilliant striker. I'm amazed that he stayed as long as he did at City, if I'm being honest. When he left Atletico and went to City, I thought it was a stepping stone to Real Madrid. It was that long ago. Before City, we thought the City were going to be around, and, you know, the different managers, different players, the stars that they've bought over the years since. But Aguero was one of those first ones, wasn't he? The first wave of superstars. It was still a surprise when he went to City. It was still a big surprise.
I think you probably trace it back. I haven't tried to do this, but I probably trace it back to a real stepping up of City, Aguero. Yeah. Because they'd had money, hadn't they? Rubinho was the first signing they got of the Emirati money. And then, it was a real step change. But anyway, that's football history from Manchester City. The crucial question then is Koeman staying around? It's a terrible run, isn't it, to the end of the season?
It is a terrible run. And the consequences are catastrophic for him, I think. Hmm. I really do. I think if there was any doubt, this has now led to Barcelona thinking, what I'd be thinking if I was Laporte was, if we give him a stay and keep him at the club, there could be a doubt early on next season.
Yeah.
And then it becomes a short-term filling in the gap project from a manager that was appointed by the previous board.
Yeah.
Xavi is the obvious one. And we're led to believe now that there is communication between Barcelona and Xavi, despite him signing the new deal. There's meant to be some sort of agreement between Xavi and his club in Qatar, because he didn't rush to take the Barcelona job the last time it was possible. So they feel he showed loyalty to them. Of course, it's good to have a relationship with Barcelona, football club Barcelona, likewise with them. So I think if you went to Xavi, you, as a Barcelona supporter, Laporte, the players, you will think that's going to be for a number of years. Whereas there's this hesitancy now of a Koeman, which there has been since day one. It's not been an easy job. He's done some really good things. The young players coming in at the expense of older players that are still at the club as well. Now, he could have opted to play Pjanic every game instead of Pedri and gone with the older players. Could have gone with Umtiti over Mingueza and Araujo. But he's been bold. But I do feel Barcelona does need some solidity now with a manager that looks like he's going to be longer term rather than constantly under the microscope and whether he's staying or leaving.
Yeah, so it's a rare thing for a super club to change a manager mid-season, isn't it? They normally have the stability and the power, as it were, to hang on to the season and make a change and make a clean break. And then, in a sense, the new guy will be making these decisions, because at the moment, Xavi's not making a decision about Aguero or Depay or whoever might play centre-back for them and all of that, is he? So, you know, there is a case for a change, isn't there? We'll see. Let us know what you think. So let us know what you think. Should Barcelona make a change? Should it be the end for Ronald Koeman? And so, Terry, enjoy the football this weekend. So it's all done, isn't it? So at the moment, we think it's Saturday tea time, basically. The crucial games all being played at the same time. Obviously, You get a medal, a large sporting medal that you can hang around your neck if you watch Levante versus Cadiz on Friday night.
This is a reference to me moaning about the new FA Cup final medals. But, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah. Patrons only. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, people wonder what the hell listeners. You're talking yeah. about. My change yeah, tradition was my big moan at the weekend with, you know, won an FA Cup medal yeah. in the 80s. And it was the same as Stanley Matthews won in the 50s and the people before that. And my Spurs heroes in the 60s. And now they've changed it for a big, gaudy, horrible.
Is it?
Ribbon.
Yeah, anyway, the patrons have heard, the patrons have yeah. heard all this.
But people on this one would be thinking, why are they talking about the big medals? There you go.
Yes, there we are. Right, so there we are, 90 minutes away, ready to suffer, everybody, and we'll see you for another podcast.